We're good?
Okay.
We're live. Good afternoon. It's March 21st, 2011. This is a meeting of the New York State Agriculture and Horse Breeding Development Fund. We're in Schenectady, New York, in the offices of the New York State Racing Wagering Board for those listening online. I'm Chairman John Sabini. I'm joined by a number of trustees, first of which I want to welcome to this board in his first personal appearance. He's been represented in the past meeting by staff, but Commissioner Darrell Albertine. For those that don't know, Commissioner is the new Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Markets for New York State, one of Governor Cuomo's early and I think best appointees. I served with Darrell in the New York State Senate and know him to be a voice of folks in parts of the state that rely on agriculture for their income and has been an effective voice within the halls of government for agricultural interests. So we welcome you, Darrell. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Look forward to serving with you. We're also joined by members of the fund board, Joseph Angelillo and Keith Hamilton. And a quorum being present, I'll call the meeting to order. First agenda item is public comment. Anyone who wishes to make any comment, please approach the microphone now. Seeing Michael Kimmelman approaching the microphone, but identify yourself for the record as they say on court. Yes.
Mike Kimmelman from Blue Chip Farms, and I'd like to address you today on behalf of both our farm and two other relatively large breeders in the state, being Winback Farm, who I spoke to Joe Thompson on the way up today, and Steve Jones from Cameo Farms. And I think, without being personally censured by the majority of the state, the equine business in the state of New York, being maybe the largest revenue-producing agricultural business in the state of New York, we owe a big thanks to this board. This board does tremendous things. The fund that was created back, I think, late 69, maybe, is responsible for New York State having the best sire stakes program in the whole country, and one that many others have been crafted after. And because of that, my family and certainly other operations, whether they be large or small, have spent a lot of money chasing that carrot, which right now sits at about $18 or $20 million. And many, many times that are spent chasing that carrot. Many of the things that are done here by this board have a lot to do with the perception from the outside world looking in at New York, which is often very much more powerful than the realities. And I think that the board, and especially Peter in the last 8 years, have done a great job taking care of that perception at times, whether it be in 2003, when some of the racetracks weren't so keen in wanting to pay into the fund, and I have to listen to my customers say, maybe I should breed in New Jersey. Maybe we should breed in Pennsylvania. New York's a little scary. They have no money for their sire stakes program. The fact that 3 years later those horses would race, New York would be by far and away continuing to be the best program. People were reluctant to breed mares that winter. The stallions I stood, stallions Winback stood, stallions at Cameo, and every other breeder in the state was affected similarly. When this kind of stuff comes out in the fall, it affects me and the rest of our industry at the sales. So protecting the perception of our business in New York State is a big deal, and I know we owe a lot of thanks to Peter along with the rest of the board for that. Upon reading recently in an article I saw in the Albany paper, it seems that there may be a possibility of a changing of the guard. I'm certainly sad to see that, in that I don't think anybody could be of a higher integrity or do a better job than Peter has done for us. And knowing very little about the political machine, I'm glad that in meeting the individual I've talked to, he seems to be a man of high integrity and has an interest in the future of our business as well. In the selfish needs of the breeders, it's not a turnkey job. It's not a job somebody walks into and knows all the moving pieces. There are a lot of faces. There are a lot of people. I know that when Peter came in, he certainly had the assistance of a fellow that was there 32 years through 7 different administrations. If this is something that's going to come about, I would hope that if he's willing to lend us a hand, if we could secure the help and the knowledge of somebody who spent the better part of the last 8 or 9 years doing this, I think it would be to our advantage and something that would keep the, in a very volatile business, which is, as you know, gambling-based, things that happen right now can affect the way people respond and relationships we have to live with, you know. So, I guess that what I'm saying is, anything we can do to do whatever we have to do to continue doing the great job you've done, I'd appreciate it. And if we can get help from Peter doing that, it would be a real big step in the right direction for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. We'll move on with the agenda. We have a, you all have in your packet a copy of the minutes of October 21st, 2010. I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes if there aren't any changes. Any changes? So we move to accept the minutes.
Move to accept.
So we move. All those in favor? All right. Minutes are approved. Financial report. I will ask Executive Director Peter Brewer to give us an update on our financial situation.
Mr. Chairman, the our financial situation is good. As you know, we had a setback in 2010. We lost the New York City OTB franchise, which was about, I believe, 60 stores around New York City, and that's a big hit. However, if you just examine on the top of our list there, the receipts, the VLT column, our VLT revenue year to date in two short months is already up $500,000 over last year. And as a matter of fact, our handle is up $80,000. So, as I say, New York City is going to take a toll, but I think the VLTs may eventually make up for it. This year, at this moment, in handle and so on, we are up about $550,000. And we still have significant participation in the program. We are down in our initial staking from last year. Our first staking period, we're down a little bit, but I think we'll still be close to last year. So we've had some problems, but I think the future is still bright in terms of revenue. And I should remind everybody, Mr. Chairman, that we continue to invest all spare cash in the short-term investment pool that's administered by the comptroller. Now, admittedly, we don't get a lot of interest in that investment. It's probably about a quarter of a point at this point. But the trustees' instructions to me have always been that the safety and security of our money comes first and return on the money comes second. And I think this continues to be the best approach because we know the money's going to be there and you can't get a lot of interest. You got to take a lot of risk to get a lot of interest, and I don't think you want to do that. So
right.
I hope the trustees are still in favor of that approach.
Mm-hmm. I just want to note for the record that every dollar you were owed by New York City OTB got paid, though, correct?
Yes.
And that was as a result of actions taken by the racing board to ask them to withhold in an escrow account monies that were supposed to be set aside that they were perhaps going to be using for other sources for other interests. But in order to continue to get out-of-state simulcast contracts approved here, we asked them to put the money aside, and I'm pleasantly surprised that the two breeding funds got dollar for dollar what they were supposed to, which is great, because about 2 months before the end of the year, I thought it was going to be more like 70 cents on the dollar, so they honored their word.
Mr. Chairman, if you consider it appropriate, I think it would be good for the record if its trustees would vote on the financial report, and particularly the continuation of investing in the STIP.
I just have one other question. You have no revenue for Suffolk for the first 2 months of this year.
Correct.
And Suffolk, for those that don't know, filed for Chapter 9 bankruptcy on Friday night at 11:59. What is the anticipated overall annual hit if Suffolk closes? Not that we want them to close, but we don't know what revenue we're going to be getting from them.
$200,000, I would say.
Okay.
So it's dealable.
Okay. So the executive director would like a vote accepting the financial report and proceeding and procedures, including ongoing investment in short-term, the controller's short-term fund. I'll entertain a motion for that.
Motion to accept.
So moved. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Financial report is approved. The next item is the grant request, as I recall. We have a grant request for the Hemlock Fair Heritage Museum. In a letter from January, they've requested $2,000 to install a sawmill. Do you have any more information, Peter, than that?
Yes, they actually bought a sawmill, I believe it was in 2001, more like a modern sawmill. And since that time, they have been doing their own, you know, cutting lumber out of the woods and milling this lumber for any improvements they do at the fair. And I'm sure Commissioner Overton probably knows the fair. This Hemlock Fair, to me, is one of the outstanding fairs in New York State. There is more volunteerism and spirit in that fair than you can imagine. I mean, you can't hold those people down. They're amazing there. But Wes, the former, actually he's a former beer distributor, but he's got plenty of money, plenty of time on his hands, and a lot of energy, and they just do a great job there. They really work hard. They have the women come and do volunteer dinners once a week during the summer hours and so on. They have work days and work weekends, and they're really, as I say, an outstanding fair. And so I thought it would be appropriate, especially since they want to put a harness racing display in their new museum, if we support them to some extent. Now, I don't know the right amount. They have raised $17,000, you know, by their own efforts. And so I thought, well, somewhere in the range of 10% matching would be fair. I think this amounts to, the recommended $2,000 would amount to roughly 12%. I haven't had much feedback except from Trustee Hamilton, who did note that he knows the place well. I don't know, Keith, do you have a comment? Or?
Well, it's a very attractive facility, and obviously we race the county fair in New York, so you're safe there. But they are not allowing any further training or stabling of harness horses there on an annual basis for training purposes, which is unfortunate. I don't want to discourage their endeavors of what they've accomplished in their fundraising and displays of harness related memorabilia or anything like that. It would be nice if they'd reopen for training. I think there would be individuals that would like to go there. We do give them $6,000 within the calendar year for improvements on racetracks and buildings. I don't know. I when they ask for $2,000, is it excessive? I don't want every county fair that's operating saying, well, we're going to tack up some wind feathers on the inside of the race secretary's door, and we want $1,500 to do that. All of a sudden, we're going to run into a little deficit there. I think we should reward their efforts. Maybe that straight 10%, Peter, would be a perfect number. Maybe cut it back a little bit and offer them
$1,750,
something along that line. Just to protect ourselves in the future. I mean, there's nothing to prohibit these other county fairgrounds from doing that. And we don't want to discourage our product in any way, but by the same token, we have to keep costs within line.
So are you saying we should amend this to...
Maybe amend it downward, the amount of the grant, explaining that that we do offer revenue sources during the course of the year, which they're well aware of, and that the found the request maybe a bit excessive, and if financially it was going, they're not seeking an annual item here, obviously.
No.
So why don't you make a motion, come up with a dollar amount?
No, I'll make a motion that we go 10% of their fundraising efforts. I think that's a generous offer.
So, okay. And so that would be a...
Well, I guess it's 1,700, is that correct?
How about not to exceed 1,700?
Not to exceed.
Okay. So, Trustee Hamilton has made a motion that we award the Hemlock Fair Heritage Museum a grant for their sawmill of a 10% matching grant of their fundraising not to exceed $1,700. Is that fairly stated?
That's fairly stated,
okay.
Yes.
All those in favor of the motion?
Do we have a second,
Mr. I'm sorry, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye. So moved. Okay. Item number five, Public Authority Accountability Committees. As you know, we're a public authority, and according to the Public Authority Accountability Act, all New York State public authorities are required to have audit and governance committees. To achieve this requirement in a traditional way does not seem practical for this fund because of the size of our board. All public authorities are not created equal. There's little doubt that the PAAA, which governs us, was aimed at larger public authorities such as the MTA or the Dormitory Authority, which have thousands of employees and millions in debt. We have two employees, and by law, we have no debt. So I'll ask Peter Gould to explain his discussions on how to comply in a manner that is doable.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I really had the benefit of our former attorney, Mr. James Long, for some recommendations on this. He went to the public authority training, like I know most of you have, and I think I may have come up with the idea, but I know Jim liked it because he felt that this is a way to do this, and I hope that our ex officio trustees would agree that it would, with all the demands on your time, and I know you're both extremely busy, it would be difficult for you to break away to serve on a committee like this, and so we're such a small board. I just thought that the audit and governance committee issues for this board are really very simple. You know, we compared to the MTA, the Dormitory Authority, the Thruway Authority, you know, we don't have those vast resources and people to control. And honestly, the audit function has really been done very simply in a very compliant fashion. We have followed the comptroller's guidelines. We put out bids for an external auditor. We were able to choose, luckily, an auditing firm that has done work for the New York State Department of Transportation and for Ag and Markets for years. They're quite knowledgeable on state audit issues and the state finance law and so on. And so they've been an excellent firm for us. At some point, I think we probably might, we've had them for I think at least 5 years now. At some point, I think we might want to choose a different firm just so that we don't have the same firm for 20 years, but they've been very, very good. They've been very knowledgeable, as I say. So that aspect of this has worked well, and I can't imagine how the trustees could improve upon it other than by reading the external audit from this accounting firm that does the audit. And if you have questions, ask questions. You know, we get pretty good marks from them every year because we do work at making sure that our shop is compliant. But again, I don't know what else, how the trustees could improve if you had an audit committee, what you could do. I don't think you could do any better in choosing a firm. Mm-hmm. Governance, the same thing. You know, the trustees, there's only four of you right now. Even if we had our fifth, it's a small group, and you can talk amongst yourselves. It isn't like it's a vast group that's spread out all over the state and we have any big issues. So I think Jim Long had a good idea, and this would allow us to be compliant with the Public Authority Accountability Act, and at the same time, it's not like we're sweeping any issues under the rug, anything you consider as to be an issue. we can put it on the agenda for the full board to consider and discuss.
Well, in other words, we would bring all those issues to the full board, which is basically what we do anyway.
Exactly.
So I have no problem with that. I don't even see that it requires a motion, frankly.
Okay.
You know, that we in effect deem ourselves the Audit and Governance Committee of this fund board because of the size of it.
We'll call it a sense of the board agreement or
something. Right. We have similar things with the Racing and Wagering Board that, you know, the law provides for all these things about, you know, how meetings are conducted, and a majority can't be anywhere. Well, you know, if two of us meet in a facility, it's it's a majority of the Racing and Wagering Board because there's only three members. So sometimes the law that, you know, is put into effect doesn't envision some of the smaller entities.
I think that's right, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Right. Okay. If there's no further discussion, we'll go on to the Breeding Fund budget, which is in your packet as well. And Peter's supplied worksheets moving forward, which include handle projection, purse account calculations, postman's fees, purse projections, and operating revenue. I'll turn it over to Mr. Gould for our discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I hope that we've supplied all the information that the trustees need. Of course, I'd be glad to answer questions now, or if someone wants to call me afterwards. You know, the budget really starts with the money left over from last year, which is implicit in the way that we calculate our so-called purse year. In order to run the lucrative purse program that we do have in the New York Cider Stakes, we begin to accumulate the money, for example, for the 2011 purses, we begin to accumulate that money on July 1st, 2010. And that's how we're able to build up such a good supply of purse dollars. In 2010, our total purses paid was about $19.5 million. Now, because some erosion in our income sources and so on, and the fact that our Breeders' Awards are increasing, we're gonna have our purse program will not be quite as strong in 2011. You may recall that the Breeders' Awards are purely a formula of the revenue as it comes in. In other words, 75% of the handle money is designated for the Cider Stakes, and then 10% of that is designated for Breeders' Awards. It's a simple formula that the trustees passed, I think, back in 2008 when we reinstituted Breeders' Awards. So, with the increasing purses in recent years, that means the Breeders' Awards are increasing. In 08, we pumped out almost $900K in Breeders' Awards. 09, about the same amount. And then in 2010, once we get finished paying out, it will be about $1.2 million that we will have paid in Breeders' Awards to our Breeders of New York State eligible horses. So that's the big picture. Projecting roughly $17.5 million in purses for 2011. The revenue sources are still strong because of the gaming. And we did have a bit of a drop-off last year in breeding. And last year we had about almost 1,600 mares bred. And at the end of the day, we had about 1,000 yearlings nominated to our program in 2010. Now, that's a 17% drop from the year before, and we take it that it's due to the economy in general, and we think that'll go back up. I don't know what the breeders think about that, but we think it'll go back up as the economy eases and as our program stays strong. So that's the big picture on the budget, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if anybody has a particular question about any line in here, any aspect of this, I'd be glad to.
Any questions on the financial plan that's been outlined?
I think our reduction in mares bred in the state of New York is pretty reflective of a national trend, is it not, Michael?
I would say certainly our industry felt that less than the thoroughbred industry, because ours is based on making money. And our horses and breeders tend to actually do that. I think you'll probably see a bit of an uptick this year. I can think of 400 mares right off the top of my head. between Lucky Chucky, Rock and Roll Heaven, Credit Winners, Fertility Change. Right off the bat, that's another 400 Americans you'd see on the upside. And, you know, I think where you'll see the increases will be on the higher end. They make more sense. It becomes tougher to create useless product when the good product is strong. And our product in New York is a global product. Product that's appreciated both Europe, Australia, New Zealand. So I think that's one thing that's been accomplished on the standardbred side, the thoroughbred side, where they've taken some of the money there and not improved their product. Our product is a tremendously well-respected product worldwide.
Okay. Other questions, comments on the financial plan? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion then to accept the financial plan as presented by the Executive Director. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Mm-hmm.
Aye. Okay. We have some personnel matters to deal with, which will mean an executive session has to be called. Or we can move to another room if that was... Why don't we go into the hearing room, which is next door.
We have to take a motion to go into executive session.
I'd like to entertain a motion to go into executive session.
So moved.
So moved. Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, if we could go next door to the